You're all very, very welcome. Apologies for, well, the delay. I was going to say slight delay. You're all very, very welcome to, I suppose, what I can call round two, because I was here last year. Were many of you here last year as well, or some of you new? You're all very, very welcome back to, I suppose, first of all, Culture Night in Belfast, but also to this very special and intimate occasion where we get a chance to hear it like it is from some of our MLAs and also a new MP. My name's Mary Louise Muir, and I'm going to be the chair, or somebody said to me yesterday, the referee for tonight. With me on stage, in the far corner.
Hang on, a 12-stroker.
It's already started. Barry McAduff, MLA for West Tyrone.
You still got it.
Beside him, Conal McDevitt, MLA for South Belfast. Beside him, a man who's been in the news this week, we will be discussing it in just a moment, Basil McRae, MLA for Lagan Valley. And beside me, Naomi Long, MP for East Belfast. If you can put your hands together and welcome everybody. We're going to go through quite a broad gamut. There'll be some laughter. There may even be some tears. We may learn something. We may be hearing stuff that we've heard before, i.e. Barry's jokes. But first of all, I think that we have to discuss the elephant in the room, which is something that happened on Wednesday night in the Waterfront Hall. And I would like to take this opportunity to ask Basil McRae if he would like to redo his speech.
Well, funny you should say that, actually. Was that you doing that?
I wasn't.
Yeah.
Positive thinking.
Did you have it in your pocket?
Well, I did before I went into the room. But it's funny, actually, isn't it? You're here because you're a rip-roaring success. And I'm here because I'm not. But there you go. But it was a very interesting night, I have to say, that, you know, I don't normally talk to crowds as small as this, you understand that? At least you didn't arrive here by coach, so I suppose it's that. you don't really want me to talk about it, do you?
How are you doing?
Well, I've emerged from my cave, only to spot Eamon Malley and Alan down here, so...
Are you guys already tweeting?
Yeah.
What are you about to say?
The line about only talking to small crowds was quite good.
That's good, okay. Well.
I did do a little interview with City Beat. Claire from City Beat phoned me up and she says, listen, there's a very serious event turn up. There's the threat in the mainland has just gone up from something to something. She said, would you like to comment? I said, yes, certainly, because, you know, maybe to comment to anything. But the... she said, "Well, just do a little sound check." I said, "Yes, usual stuff, name and title." I said, "Basil McRae, XUUP." But she missed it completely. So there you go. So then she just carried on did the interview. So what's any bit for the breaking news?
Can I also then bring in the others who are on this platform? Barry, were you watching the news at the Waterfront Hall that night on Wednesday night?
I was, and. Yeah, McGinnis could very exercise, you know.
He's not here, is he?
No.
He's a bit nervous, that's all.
Ken McGinnis, no, he's not here, and I tell you why Ken McGinnis isn't here. I attended a meeting in England about a year ago of the British-Irish Parliamentary Assembly. It was in Newcastle in the northeast of England, and Ken McGinnis showed up at the Slieve Donard Hotel. We were about to lock horns on constitutional issues, myself and Ken McGinnis, but I was in England and he's there. Apart from that, I'm keeping well.
Thank you. feedback, but that's probably a good thing. Naomi, obviously things have been very, very good for you at the moment, but did you, while you were in Westminster, cast an eye back to Belfast and look in at what was happening on Wednesday night?
Well, we're in conference recess at the minute, so I was in Belfast, but I was at my association meeting, not quite the same turnout as Basel had in the Waterfront Hall, but I managed to get a look into the news when I came home, though I think there was a problem with the count. It seemed to be taking a long time, and I thought the news was just going to have to go on forever to get the result, but we got it in the end.
Yeah, there was a problem with the count.
Busy, because I know that you're like Eamon, a massive tweeter. Were you busy that night?
I was actually hoping for a down win this week, and I have to say it's probably the only thing Fermanagh will ever win of any notoriety in anything. And certainly been able to bring 6 or 7 buses from Fermanagh to something is a huge achievement for anyone across the country. So all we need now to do is to get Tom Elliott to actually support his own county somewhere else. And maybe it'll lead to this resurgence of Fermanagh gap. And that would be a wonderful start, albeit at Basel's expense.
I'm trying not to look at you when you say that.
Yes,
sir.
Yes. I am relatively new to it.
You are, but you're prolific.
Prolific enough. I've gone through a lot, you know. But do you know where I tend to tweet most? In the chapel at Car Park in Terrymore, because it's the only place where we have a reception.
You actually said that on your tweet the other night. I felt that maybe you were quite a religious man, but...
It was a lonely moment, you know, I was here on my own. I was kind of tuned into what was going on here in Basel.
So you were sitting in the chapel, car park in Carrickmore, wondering how Basel was doing.
Praying for Basel. Because
I think that was the start of a downfall. Actually. It was all okay till then.
Eamon Nally's going to stand down. He's tweeting, are you?
No, he's not.
Should we get him back?
For a lot of people here, and we see things like, you know, we see the programmes and we see you on the news and we hear the reports and the, in a way, the choreographed dances that you guys do day in and day out. What's it really like? What's it really like, Basel, to be there in Stormont and being in the assembly with your colleagues here?
Well, not just my party then.
No.
Just my friends and colleagues. No, it's actually. I was saying to Naomi when we were just waiting to come in that, you know, how exciting was it for her to be in Westminster? Because I do remember whenever I first got elected to the Assembly, for about 5 weeks, maybe a bit longer than that, I was sure that someone was going to come and tap me on the shoulder and say, I'm sorry, there must be some mistake, you know, you've got to leave now.
They did that on Wednesday night.
But you see when you bring that up, what is it? What is a genuine thing is that no matter how well you do or how badly you do, there's always a significant number of people that have voted for you. Mm-hmm. And it's a tremendous honour, maybe humbling experience that you come along. I remember, you know, you're going to talk about, you know, how successful I am in politics. My first election was in Westminster 2005, where I scored 9,700 votes, I think it was, only slightly behind Geoffrey at 21,000. But you know, it still is interesting that 9,000 people will put their X beside your name and you fight on because they trust you.
Do you have that passion still, Barry? I mean, how long have you been in politics for?
Well, I suppose I've been at Stormont for about 12 years.
You don't know.
But, just, you know, it is exciting. You know, it is exciting. Time management is absolutely crucial because you're on a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and a Thursday.
It's your job.
Have you no commitments?
But you'd love to be in your constituency more. Oh, you see, it's all right for you city slickers. You know, we're rural citizens located I would like some of the meetings to take place in Cumbria, which I think is a reasonable compromise.
Where to get your mobile reception? Where do you think in Pomeroy Stormont could realistically be moved to?
Well, I know the person who has the key to the credit union building.
Is that my window money?
There's other reasons for that.
So that's feasible. We have with us Conal, who is a Bloan from Dublin.
Everywhere.
How did a Dubliner become interested in Northern Irish politics?
Well, it depends on... It's either a woman or John Hume, and it depends on who's asking. It was a woman, and then it was John Hume, and a combination of both brought it about. But, I mean, I'm quite unique here, because no one's ever voted for me for anything. And yet, In fact, the only time anyone ever voted for me was at a selection convention. There were about twice as many people as in this room, and only just over half of them managed to vote for me. So I actually think it's a great privilege to end up there with so little support, unlike Basil. Actually managed to get like 10 times more support and end up nowhere.
I'm actually beginning to feel sorry for Basil. I think we need to move on. Naomi, this is your first time to appear at Stormont Teacups. Barry and Basil obviously were here last year. Is there any advice that you can give Barry to Naomi for tonight?
I think she's started very well.
Yeah.
No, I'll just say, don't be too smart with the chair. Because Mary Louise is ruthless. She may seem pleasant and benign, but
I'm used to taking Barry's advice because I used to sit in the UFM-DFM committee beside him, and he would often give me pearls of wisdom. Isn't that what you said, the word pearls of wisdom? When we were sitting in committee.
So, Naomi, from your point of view, who do you think of the three here are the most combative in the assembly situation?
Definitely.
I don't know, I think Conal's quite...
He's quite feisty.
Yeah.
He certainly talks a lot, is that the same thing?
No, because if that was the question, I would have sent you.
Does the face pop
back of the game? Well, I didn't say I was quiet, I just...
We want to go for a test, we want to go for the world record. We want to see how long you can talk tonight without drawing breath. Because your record so far is 15 minutes and 32 seconds. And we're looking for more than that.
And what was she talking about then?
We don't know, we don't listen.
They just time me.
Are you enjoying Westminster?
I am. I've really enjoyed it, but I'm kind of getting now what Barry talks about being remote from your constituency, because I was one of the city slickers he talks about, because obviously Stormont's in my constituency and City Hall was just like next door. So for me, I never had to be that far away from home just to do my job, and I could see my constituents on Mondays and Tuesdays. I was like, Barry, you couldn't do that. It was a luxury. So when you can't do that because you're in London, you're much more remote, and it requires you to manage your time an awful lot better. But I mean, I'm really enjoying kind of being there and having the opportunity, I suppose, to kind of see Westminster playing out when you're actually sitting there on those benches.
Who are you seeing? Who have you spotted?
I mean, you see them all, but I mean, one of the most amazing things was just sitting, I was over for Pope Benedict's visit last Friday, and I was sitting in the hall kind of watching everything, and one of the things I suppose was most impressive was to see that lineup of Prime Ministers, former Prime Ministers, because, you know, you had, from when I was a kid, kind of Margaret Thatcher, and then John Major, and, you know, Tony Blair, and Gordon Brown, and they're all sitting there, and it was just, I was watching Gordon Brown and Tony Blair, because I read the book over the summer, and they sat them beside each other, and, you know, no matter how well padded those seats are, that was uncomfortable, I guess. It was weird to see them there, and to see how young John Major looks now, because I have this image of him with this really old grey man, and actually
now
he is just like, he is older and he had just some grey hair, but he actually looks an awful lot more young than he did at the time when he was Prime Minister. I think it must be, it's pressure of the job, I suppose. Yeah. But that was kind of weird to see them all just in the lineup and to be in that room.
You were talking about no matter how padded the seats are or were, how uncomfortable that moment might have been. And you and I were at an event in the Belfast City Hall. It was for Derry, Londonderry, City of Culture, but Eamon.
An auction. On the phone in New York.
But we were at an event, and it was similar to this, but Derry, Londonderry come up to pitch, you know, before they became capital of City of Culture, to into Belfast, and you were on the platform, and I think it was the first time that you'd been in the proximity, close proximity to Peter Robinson, who did say something about it was about you having unseated him.
He said, I'm glad on this occasion that the Lord Mayor's been gracious enough to leave me a seat.
Yeah. We see that kind of stuff and it's cut and thrust and it makes good headlines for the journals in the room, and you know, we might have a bit of a snigger, but do you guys actually get on? I mean, not just you and Peter Robinson, but you know, generally.
Is that something you
want to tell us? Yeah. I don't know. I don't think everybody gets on in politics. I mean, you know, there are different personalities and there are some people that you genuinely like and there are others that you don't. It doesn't necessarily spit along party political lines. I mean, it's not that you love everybody in your own party, you know. Is that right? I don't mean to look at you faster, but, you know, it just, you don't necessarily, but there are people that you get on with because you maybe get something in common with them, or, you know, but even when you're disagreeing with people, it doesn't necessarily mean you don't like and respect them.
Yeah.
It just means you have a different viewpoint. And so it's not, for me, it's not personal.
Yeah.
But there are people in politics that I genuinely don't like, but that's nothing to do with their politics. It's more to do, I think, with
the personalities in those cases, where you just don't get on, or you don't respect what they're doing, or you don't think they're being honest about what they're doing.
In those cases, I think it's hard work. But it's like every other line of work. There are people you like in your job, and there are people you don't.
Who do you not like, Barry?
Who
do you like first, and then maybe
who do you like in the DUP?
Okay.
Jim Shannon is an MLA for Strangford, MP now for Strangford, and I was very impressed with his work, you know, his record of work, his attention to his constituency. I just knew that he was going to win handsomely that Strangford battle because of his connections to his community. So just admired Jim Shannon's hands-on representation of his constituency. Last evening series.
God, all right.
That's him finished.
That's it. If you want the truth. I tell you who I have great difficulty getting on with, and may come as no great surprise to you, Gregory Campbell. And can I tell you, in the summer, I was fight of the night.
Yes.
At the Marquee in Derrylaughan. There's 700 people there, each paid £20 in, 13 boxing contests, 3 rounds. Martin Rogan, the heavyweight champion, and Red Hand Luke were my corner men.
Wow.
And my opponent was called Eamon Campbell. And whenever I hit him, I kept thinking, I wonder is he anything to break up? Found out he wasn't.
Yeah.
Gregory Lee wouldn't get on terribly well.
Right, okay. You've been very busy between the boxing and are you doing something with the Strictly Come Dancing? Not on the telly, but something.
Yeah, well, I'm a judge. Yeah. A big event in Silver Ridge in County Armagh. on the 6th of November, myself, Paddy O'Rourke, the Armagh manager, Conor Murphy, and Murray Louise McCurry from the Irish News, we are it. And
which one on the panel, Strictly Come Dancing telly programme, judge are you?
Simon Cowell, what are you joking about? I do know his stuff, X Factor versus Strictly.
Are you Bruno?
Aye, Bruno would do.
He's so small, isn't he?
Bruno, small and passionate.
Yes. You don't have to dance?
No, thanks be to God. Yeah. Thanks be to God.
Do you shave chest?
Don't I? But we'll talk about that later. But I'm really looking forward to it. And I was asked earlier in the week, what do I expect from the dancers?
Yeah.
What I expect from the dancers is sartorial elegance.
Yeah.
Style and personality throughout.
Uh-huh.
And the fluency of movement that is normally only associated with Peter Kennedy and Stephen Lee. That's what I expect.
So, pretty high standards.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to the event. It's going to be wonderful.
If you had the choice, Conal, to be Strictly Come Dancing, would you rather be a judge or a dancer?
Oh, dancer?
Yeah.
Definitely. I can't dance, but I'd rather be a dancer than a judge. Yeah. Strictly Come Dancing.
Would you be a professional or would you be a celebrity?
You'd have to get to dance with one of the female professionals. So that means you have to be a celebrity.
Yes.
Just to get to dance with one of the female professionals.
So that's how
you've thought this through.
I don't know any of their names, but I have a clear hierarchy of preferred female professionals. It's funny for that.
Moving to it. I believe also that you two guys have a bond in terms of running, a special bond, but in running.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you run around Stormont?
Well, he runs. I send him out to train around Stormont, and then we run races together with Stephen Nolan.
Uh-huh.
So the race that we run with Stephen Nolan is generally how many times can we lap him? And our current record is 4 times in 6 miles, isn't it?
It was the best.
Which is great. And it's a bit of a liability whenever you come to lap Stephen Nolan, because he doesn't particularly appreciate it being lapped. So he basically tries to tackle you. So I head off one side and leave him to sort of Nolan.
But
he is a very good runner. He is genuinely a very good runner. Like competitive cycles and all that crack.
Yeah.
I try my best. Yeah. You can't do any more than that.
No, you can't.
But you're a busy man.
Do you run up that hill?
Yeah, we do. And it is very, very tough. It is steep. You wouldn't want to be going at 100 miles an hour.
No. And what do you do whenever you go past the statue?
Well, as you know from the steps, Carson statue.
Yes.
I put a hurling stick in the top. You know that we've awarded the Edward Corn Edward Carson. I'm just waiting for somebody to say Ta'a has some doon arum on Corn Edward Carson a Glacu, you know?
That's it. That would be a moment.
I was about to say that.
It's a mile from the steps to the gate.
Uh-huh.
So if you run down, which is handy,
that's
a mile.
Yes.
But the run back up is a bit more
difficult. It's a bit
longer. So do you... when do you do this? Because obviously...
He does it at lunchtime,
yeah.
Sneakily.
Uh-huh.
Now, those of us in the SDLP are much more dedicated to our job representing.
I was just about to say,
you'd meet Barry sort of sneaking back in after lunch, you know, looking a bit sweaty with the tie back on. Having left the shower room. There's a shower room up there. We've got this beautiful bathroom that only 3 of us use. So the thing about it now is...
Are you sure you would like to rephrase that?
The third person...
Who's the third man?
Is a woman.
I wanted to know that as well.
And she's not a member. But it's a beautiful bathroom, and I think we have a duty, to keep, you know...
But it is an island up there. It really is an island. See,
so... Yeah, who's in the bathroom with the two of you?
Nobody.
Just the two of you in the room.
Just ask Conal that question.
Well, no, I mean we're prone to collective sharing because we had a football match 10
so
days ago.
Totally.
And the worst bit of the football match was actually ending up with 15 grown MLAs buck naked in a proper football dressing room.
Yeah.
Except for Ian McRae. I don't know if you know who Ian McRae is. He's Willie, so he's quite a good footballer, actually, who chose to leave a rather large Rangers medallion on. So that's all he wore all the way through the shower room, and the shower room which took him a lot of stick.
Yeah.
Basil didn't get changed.
No.
He was a
Did you take part in it?
Take part in it?
Yes. In the football match.
Sorry.
I don't know where this
is
going.
Talking about showering? No,
Basil, you want to show us your injury?
This is pretty gruesome.
Go ahead.
You think
it should?
Yeah.
Do you want Basil to show you
his injury? I think you need to avert your eyes if you're sensitive. Look at this. Look at
that. Flash photography.
Look. That was Barry McLeod did that. Came to my team.
Who actually did that to you?
Actually, nobody told me about AstroTurf. So I did a rather spectacular dive.
Oh.
And it hurt my leg.
Oh.
I got no sympathy from anybody, not any of my teammates, not anything.
Do you know who else got badly injured that day?
Stephen Nolan.
Mark Simpson.
Wow.
Mark Simpson of the BBC was in goals, and he was quite good.
Yeah.
And he made a brilliant save, full length dive,
tipped
the ball over the bar, but in the process, ruptured his groin. He had a groin injury?
Yeah, probably should have used his hands.
Wasn't quite competitive then, because it was journalists against MLAs.
It was very competitive. And we were surprised because we were actually better. And we didn't expect to be better. In fact, Eamon had sort of told us
in some considerable detail for about 3 weeks about how terrible we were and how wonderful they were.
Yeah.
And about 10 minutes into the game, it dawned on us that actually we could win this.
Yeah.
So we scored two goals from play, very classy, nice little goals.
Paul Given, DUP, scored a brilliant goal.
Chris Little.
That was only today.
And you know me long.
That was my contribution to sporting achievement in the assembly, was to be replaced by somebody who was sporting.
To which all the journalists basically say, you know, this isn't fair because nobody here playing on this team has been elected.
Yeah. But there was a moment towards the end when we were winning 2-1 and we were on course for victory.
And then Conor Murphy played.
You should say that you and I were actually on the spectators bench at that stage. We were cheering them on.
We were.
Very effectively, I thought.
I thought Don Purvis wasn't a very fair manager. No. Don was inspirational, but... We were genuinely winning 2-1. Now that's soccer. Two goals, one wasn't not two, not one. But
you yelled, "Come on, Armagh!"
But there was a moment at the end, and you knew it was a fix because we conceded a penalty, which wasn't a penalty. When Mae McFetridge pointed to the spot, right? She said, "Look, Conor Murphy handled the ball," but a day later. And that's why you do need a truth commission or a truth recovery. Mae McFetridge did say, admittedly, it wasn't a penalty, and how I know now is it didn't hit his hand, it hit him in the face, because I saw Connor's wee cheeks getting red. So it wasn't a penalty, we were robbed.
We were robbed.
What was the final?
They beat us in penalties. But then there was a ringer thing going on here, because what happened was they had Mark Simpson in goal, and we had Kieran McCarthy.
Yeah,
Kieran's a great guy and he was Trojan in goal. He was brilliant.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not fair. It's not a fair fight on a penalty shootout.
But we can have Chris Little, who's a brilliant footballer, definitely is. On the media side, they had a brilliant footballer as well.
Yeah.
His name's Eamon Malley. He played extremely well.
I spoke to Conor Murphy yesterday or the day before, and I said, "When's the return match? We want a return match." And you know what he said? The MLAs, he said, are training at a camp high in the spirit. And I tweeted and I said, "We don't fear the big guns."
Can you corroborate this story, Barry?
I can't confirm it at this time.
Yeah.
At this time. I cannot be specific at this time.
Yeah.
I need to phone my press office.
Yeah. Paul, before you entered politics, before you became an MLA, you were on the other side. What's it like? Because you were working in press and PR, and you know, you were like the madman side of the SDLP, the brand man. But what's it like now being among them?
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Kind of you come home at night and you switch on the telly and you see yourself at work and you think, was I there? And that sounds different when it's on the telly. Yeah. What are you carrying on? Like yesterday was a case in point. Paul Given lost it yesterday at the committee with Mike on the Gimsy, and basically decided, sent me a little note about 2 minutes into McGimsey's opening remarks saying, "I'm going to call for his head." So I said, "Well, fine, you know, do what you like." And then I switch on the telly and there he is calling for McGimsey's head. Yeah. And I'm thinking, that didn't sound like that when I heard him beside me in the committee. So it's all very surreal. I can't really come to terms. The other thing that's most surreal is people calling you Mr. McDevitt.
Yeah.
Which happens. "No, Mr. McDevitt." "Yes, Mr. McDevitt." "No, Mr. McDevitt." And people have been polite to you and sort of been sort of slightly deferential. That's very, very surreal and entirely unjustified.
Would you rather they were rude?
Well, I'm more used, when you work in public relations, you're very used to people being quite rude and robust and sort of disagreeing with everything you say, whereas now they just sort of sit there and smile.
Yeah, has it changed for you now? We're going from MLA to MP. How people treat you?
Well, I suppose to some degree it does, because they're only a 10 MPs, so the focus tends to be there. But I mean, it's strange because obviously when you're an assembly member, you get referred to by your name, so you kind of get used to that. The weirdest situation is in the council, particularly in Belfast City Council, where actually the officers are quite deferential towards councillors, and you're always referred to as councillor and never by your name.
Mm.
So it's kind of quite a strange environment, because it feels a bit odd that you're dealing with people who have maybe 30 years experience, really senior members of staff. You're referring to them by their first name, and they're calling you councillor. And it's really, I find it very strange. We were just talking about this outside, and it's one of the oddest things that I've ever experienced was when I went on to the council. It's more even, I think, in the assembly, though I remember Margaret Ritchie got scolded
because she called me Naomi in the chamber. She was answering a question, and she spoke to the, I mean, she spoke through the speaker, she did it properly, but she said, you know, in terms of what Naomi has raised, and somebody got up on a point of order and said, you're not meant to call members by their first name. And I said, Mr. Speaker, with all due respect, I've been called worse, so I'm not being called. But it was literally one of those moments where you know people so well, and it just seems bizarre. To, I mean, I would be odd going, Mr. McRae, do you know, at this stage, because you know each other, so it's, it's a bit of an odd kind of protocol to go through to have to refer to people by a title, I think.
On a point of order.
Your order is pointed.
On a point of order, a young cordon. I remember, you know, the formality of it all.
I know.
Like, I don't particularly like wearing a jacket, right? In a warm room.
We'll take it off.
But males are compelled, male members of the assembly are compelled to wear a jacket in the chamber.
You have to keep it on at all times.
You do?
Nothing else, or just a jacket?
Just a jacket. But I do recall, you know, the speaker, William Hay, who I think is very good at his job. William Hay, very good at his job. I did, on a point of order, ask William Hay, a Kian Corlia, could the speaker investigate the protocol in other regional assemblies and legislatures vis-a-vis the donning or non-donning of a jacket for the purpose of addressing the House? And Tom Elliott, your mate. Tom Elliott.
Leader.
I said, is it not high time we introduced a short sleeve order around here? And I think that's a parliamentary term. But Tom Elliott mistook it as a military term. Because Tom Elliott said, oh, further to that point of order, Mr. Elliott, which military organisation did Mr. McAduff learn the term short sleeve order? Further to that point of order, well, it certainly wasn't the Ulster Defence Regiment. Mr. Elliott.
Did anything come from that?
Well, you were allowed to take your jacket off on the day when it was really hot, because there was, I mean, the speaker has to rule to do that. But
and how hot does it have to be?
Well, there's no, it depends on the speaker's prerogative. But there are no rules about what women can wear in the chamber,
right,
or can't wear in the chamber. So you could.
So they wear anything or nothing?
Well, pretty much. You could wear whatever you like.
I'd be more interesting.
You know, but I remember, it says something about the culture, but also it does give you...
Do you think, though, that women politicians are treated differently to male politicians in Northern Ireland?
No. They might used to have been, but I don't think so. Certainly not by their colleagues in the chamber. It's not like you get an easy time.
Yeah.
At least I didn't. But no, I don't think so. I mean, that's one of the things, I suppose, when the rules were written, it says things like, you know, you get this a lot on invitations, you know, jackets are required, men are required to wear jackets, but it doesn't say what women are required to wear, so you can do
that. And they do flaunt it, because during the summer, our female colleagues do basically arrive in their summer dresses.
Yeah.
And, you know, there they are, you know, nice and cool.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there in our suits.
I think
if you don't have your suit, you won't get called.
I think.
Which is why Gerry Adams never speaks in the assembly. Because he never wears a tie, and if you don't have your tie on, you won't get called. So it's a good excuse.
When John Alderdice was in the chair, he was full of pomp and ceremony. And on one occasion, he did send a note down. As I saw it, Adams says, "What do you think of that?" A wee note from John. It said, "Mr. Adams. Dress code? ?" and Jerry sent a note back up. I don't have a dress.
They're tweeting. Here, you better start tweeting too.
I'll take a picture of the audience.
Take a photo of all you guys.
Okay.
If anybody doesn't want to be seen, duck now.
Right.
Let's talk about this Twitter. Okay, go on, take a photograph now.
Okay, right. 3, 2, 1, hands up! Go on, hey!
Can we put a text into that? A vote for Basil.
Of your new party.
This party left yet?
We were talking earlier about the name of Basil's new party, and we thought, you know, all the conventional words that he might wish to use are already there. Ulster, Unionist, Progressive, Democratic. Democratic, they're all there. What are you going to use?
I'm looking for sort of suggestions from the audience. any word that might be used to describe a party that's not already in use?
In Northern Ireland.
Or
well, anywhere in the world.
What about the BNP, Basil's new party?
Anybody got any suggestions?
You used to be a PR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes?
No, sir, you know this DAA party.
It's too long.
Talking
well,
about
it's not longer than you come.
Well, we did learn a few lessons from the particular one.
Talking about social networking, are you Twitter? I know you're a Twitter kind of guy. Twitter versus Facebook. Who's into it? I suppose you've all got them, have you?
I would be much more into Facebook. Actually, I have to say that the Twitter thing is quite scary because I did Twitter something once.
Tweet.
Well, that's probably where I went wrong. within minutes, Stephen Nolan was on the phone asking me to expand on what I just said. So I've learned now that, you know, unless you're saying something like, when you're tweeting something like, you know, I've had 2 eggs for breakfast,
yeah,
that's about the size of it.
Yes. Yeah.
But you know, the Facebook is quite interesting. Because you do link to other media, particularly if people have got them online with the press cuttings, and you do get quite a dialogue coming back from people to say, now, you know, is it representative? Not really, but it does give people some way of feeding back, and I do think that's the real thing about the new media. It's not for us to be pushing information out, it's to be receiving information.
Like this one, for example,
right.
That I've just received
okay.
from him. Stand up, Adam.
You can talk to one another.
This is down here in the corner, right, is Alan in Belfast, and he's just tweeted, at Conor McDavid admits he's the one on stage who no one has voted for, other than half a selection bench. So this is great. So I'm going to spend the rest of the weekend answering pointless questions from people about how nobody voted for me just because of Twitter.
I'm quite glad actually to meet Alan in Belfast.
That's
there you go. This is the person I've already known on Facebook, so I can actually put a face to.
Barry's familiar with this because these two you see are tweeting at each other, but Barry meets everybody he's texting in the car park when they're on their tweet.
Are you sure that's what they're doing? No, I want to hear more about you meeting people in the car parks. Why do you say you haven't have a phone? What?
I don't.
You don't, John?
No.
Have you got no friends? I mean, you've got no friends.
Definition of friend is very important.
Ah.
See this business of Facebook? Like, and again, Jerry Adams, right? He sent a message to me, I have 4,500 friends. Yes, I don't think so, Jerry. What's your definition of a friend? So I have about 3. Well, I'll tell you one thing I like on Twitter. I like this. About 7 years ago, I had this young student who went to Liverpool to university with a dissertation. Hadn't heard of Darren since. But since I began on Twitter, about 4 messages a day, or 5 or 6, you know, Darren sent a message back to me, all humbly said, thanks for helping me with the dissertation. I now realise how busy you are. I thought it was nice. You might think it's nice.
Do you not employ somebody, though? You know, to fill in your Facebook.
No, you're not. That goes against the whole code. You have to do it yourself.
Are you sort of an expert in that?
Yeah. I'm obsessed by it.
Are you on Facebook?
Yeah.
And you're not my friend?
No.
What is unfollow about?
Have you ever been unfollowed?
It's very, very hard.
It's like a big sign comes up. Loser.
The problem is they unfollow you and then you don't realise it a lot of the time.
But then they start following you again. So you send them a message and you go, why are you following me again?
Yeah.
And they have to admit that they unfollowed you in the first place, which is brilliant because they have to confess.
How many people are following you, Barry?
Well, I'm relatively new. I'm probably just cracking about 5 or 6 months.
Right.
I think following me on Twitter is something that is probably above 500, I think.
Right.
Which... it's all right.
Pretty
but Dom Purvis is 1,000, so I'm a bit jealous. And,
that's everybody votes for.
Facebook, then, what I do is, I've learned this thing, I'm not very technical, #FB updates your Facebook directly from your Twitter.
Ah, right.
So I think I might be approaching 1,500 or something on Facebook.
Have we lost a lot of people in the audience? And some on the platform.
I'm not into Twitter.
I mean, I do have a Twitter account because I know at some point I'm going to have to do it because you know. But, so I've kind of like I've got my name so that I know when I need to. Well, but I just kind of think, I don't know. I just think with Twitter it's just too short, too instantaneous, and too prone to mistake. I think people put stuff out there without thinking, and then it's taken totally out of context because you can't give context in a couple of. Kind of said, you know, a couple of words. So I just think it's better for receiving stuff, I think. I think that's the issue. But with Facebook, I quite like Facebook, though I don't really use it for political purposes, but I quite like Facebook for just connecting and for people to be able to send me stuff.
Are you my friend?
No, I do never ask. You have to invite a person to be your friend. You never invited me.
Shy. I've never been good with girls.
I'll friend you when I get home.
Good.
Okay. Well,
so nothing in life is ever really wasted.
We will watch that with interest.
Michael's here as well.
And this is interesting because Michael's in the audience and he is also a politician. Is it? And I'm just thinking because you are away from home. How many? 3 or 4 nights out of the week now? Because of probably
like 3. Yeah.
I mean. Let's talk seriously about the impact that has on your family life and on married life and political life in general. Not you, but all of you. Because, I mean, are you wedded to the job as much as anything else?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, Michael's here tonight partly because I didn't want to have to drive down and get caught in the traffic and end up being late and all that kind of stuff, so Michael can't drive.
It's not just that he wanted to see you.
No, well, there is that as well. I mean, it was one of the advantages. I mean, I joked about it last year, but it was true that when it was Lord Mayor, it was great because I could take Michael to work with me. And we'd actually get to see each other. And it is a bit like that, that you end up going to work. Yeah. On party things or whatever it is together, and that's when you get the chance to, you know. So it's quite hard to get time aside to just switch off and do other things, particularly with Twitter, Facebook, your email on your BlackBerry, which at times, I mean, it's really convenient on one hand, and on the other hand, you just love to just get back to just from having to phone your home phone and leave a message, you know. And there's a bit of that where you just, to get downtime is really hard because you're accessible all the time. And I think the more you are accessible, the harder it is to switch it off and leave it alone because you become addicted to checking your phone all the time. Yeah. So you go out to a restaurant to have a meal and you're both checking your phone and it's like you should have left it at home.
Colin, you're married with 3 kids. I mean, how much does the job impact on your home life?
I suppose answering it honestly, the past 6 months have been awful at one level in our household, but truth be told. My wife's had to go back to work full time. The kids have thankfully started school, and I'm never about. Absolutely. Now, I wasn't about much, but I'm never about. And that's the downside to politics. The upside is the kids got to sit in Michael Coulthard's Red Bull Formula One car one morning up in Stormont, right? And so they pounced on into school on Monday morning, and what were you doing today? Or on the weekend, and they were able to say, well, you know, I was inside a Formula One car, and or David Coulthard, I should say, was there, and we got our pictures taken. Yeah. So the problem is I don't think they have any sense of how privileged that is at all. Mm-hmm. That to them has now just become normality. It's part of the perk with Dad's job.
Yeah.
And so they run around Stormont thinking it's just a regular office block.
Yeah.
And hopefully someday they'll be able to trade off all the times they didn't see me with some of the good memories of having been special places and met special people.
But you as well, I mean, all joking aside, I mean, you must spend, you know, half your time driving between Belfast and Tyrone, you know, so how does that impact on you?
That's the hateful bit. See, 4 days a week, I'd love it to be reduced to 3 days a week in Belfast as opposed to 4.
That's back to Pomeroy and the credit union.
Well, 6 miles of fire side of Pomeroy, so if I invite people to be in Pomeroy, it's a compromise on my part. but my wife, you know, is sensible, private, and I would say to Paula, will you go with me to that event? And she'll say, definitely not. And she'll say, there's enough instability in this house without me going on the road too.
Nice woman.
You know, homework is her domain. I help a little bit, you know, over the phone maybe. But it mightn't be in the same county. It helps at homework time if you're in the same county.
I don't
know. Would be my observation.
Why is that?
Just if to be physically in close proximity to the pupil, the child.
Because make the signal stronger or something.
I usually don't have.
So is what happens is you leave the house and you go up to the car park in the chapel.
Yeah.
Bring home.
You find home. I do the corrections.
Yeah. There's another one there. Now, if I did a wee bit at the house, I'd like to peel potatoes, for example, for the next day. You might arrive home at 11 o'clock at night, but you get away with murder, literally. If you just peel the potatoes and leave them in the saucepan, but the next day, say I was talking to Stephen Lowe the next day, I would say, Stephen, this thought came to me when I was peeling the potatoes last night, and Paul will send me a message. The wee bit that you do, you broadcast it. There's always a motive in peeling the potatoes. It presents you in a certain light.
Yeah. Is there anything, if you haven't gone into politics, Carl? I mean, obviously you've done both sides of politics, but is there anything else that you'd like to have done?
God, I would have loved to have won an All-Ireland for Dublin, Mike.
Right.
Okay. Why can't I play football?
Right.
It would have been nice to play for Real Madrid, but the same problem arose. I can't play football.
In fact, the only thing
I was ever proven to be good at was talking, to be honest with you. And I've managed to make a living out of that.
Uh-huh.
And pick up a nickname.
Which is?
The Mouse from the South.
Did anybody know that? Barry.
But
well,
if not,
what?
Football would have been my thing too. I'd love to have.
Except when we were growing up, the Dubs were on top. Right?
I know.
Yeah.
I know, but let me assure you of this. Between Tyrone and Kerry, we have 39 All Irelands.
That's right.
Between Tyrone and Kerry, they might have 36. But you know, on aggregate. No, I just do love sport. I have to say, I love sport.
Yeah.
Every day in life, in some shape or form, I try to have a sporting aspect to my day. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to run 5K, not 10K, but 5K.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to a football match, an intermediate football match in County Leitrim. Wise up.
You just going there for pleasure.
Well, the manager of one of the teams
right.
in the county final is a close personal friend of mine, and I want to show interest.
Yes.
And I helped that team, again, through, see, networking. Networking's deadly because we do have great contacts.
Yeah.
We do have great contacts because we like to ring ministers, private officers, chief executives. That's the way we operate every day in life.
When you say we, MLAs.
Yes,
yeah,
and if you say that to people say you're name dropping.
Yeah.
But you're not, because every day in life, you do ring a minister's private office and you say, is it in order to request? You're always requesting things for people.
Right.
So always go to the chief executive, and if they say you're in the wrong place, forgive me. Can you direct me to the appropriate person? So always going at the very top, the very organisation, is my tip to everybody.
Right, okay.
You know, ring the government department, put me through to the minister's private office, within a minute you'll be speaking to the secretary,
mm-hmm.
and make your request.
Basil, would this be something that you would do?
Well, we don't normally do that bit, you know, being allowed to phone ministers' private offices.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We have rules and regulations in our party.
Or Mike on the gym seat, who wouldn't
Well, specifically prohibits us from contacting anybody actually in the party. It's the Data Protection Act. So it's actually a bit of a secret, really. We're not actually sure who's in the party. Well, so apparently so, it was great to see them all, and, you know, actually we're going to have another party next year, and...
When you thought with his influence on the policing board, he could have organised a checkpoint in Dungana.
The real problem with that, Barry, is that... Because it was a party issue, I didn't think it was appropriate to use the official channels. So I spoke to some of my colleagues, MLAs in the services. Are you guys any good at roadblocks? But you aren't the force you used to be, you know that?
You let them down,
Another observation
I'd
like to make, another alternative was bingo. Had bingo been arranged in about 5 minutes?
I did have a big sign of diversion bingo.
Bingo.
Unfortunately, if you remember, the rain and the wind was very strong that day, and it blew over. So,
there's a cartoon in the Belfast Telegraph about you today.
Oh, there is. Yeah.
Tell us about that, Basil.
Well, I haven't seen it, but I'm going to buy it.
Has anybody
not seen the yes.
Is this the Gentleman's Square one?
Yeah,
that's. I did think it was quite interesting. You know, cartoons are wonderful. They if they're done right, they do encapsulate the whole essence of something, and it is part of humour, of course. And so, for those of you that haven't seen it, it is a picture of me apparently standing in Chairman Square, facing down the masked coaches of the Manic. It's if the double deckers did it. If it was single deckers, it was okay.
Well, if you'd asked, I could have designed you a little bridge somewhere. I could have been flying.
That's the trouble. It's just all the things that help I get now. But you see next year.
She was
a civil
engineer.
And I was a chemical engineer.
Is that right?
That's right.
And Barry did some engineering, but we don't talk
about it. I do have to tell you a story. I'm sorry if any of you have heard this one before, but I was over in Washington with the policing board, and we had a bit of a problem. We went down to Quantico to see, you know, how the FBI do things. And unfortunately for us, it's secret. So when we drove down there was no signpost. So we missed the way in, and we arrived late, and we had to go back with our tail between our legs. And we went back and we spoke to the chief of police in Washington, and he was very sympathetic, and he said, "Don't worry," he says, "I will lay on certain things." He says, "You know, we've got some helicopters, would you like to go for a ride?" And we thought, well, we could do that. So there was Ian Paisley Jr., Alex Maskey, and myself. And we went along to this helicopter ride, and there's a bit of a briefing, and the helicopter pilot said, he says, "Have you ever been in a helicopter before?"
Alex definitely was.
Well, don't you spill my tongue, because it came up, I said, Ian and I readily said yes, and Alex sort of nodded rather sheepishly, and as we were walking out to the helicopter, he says, "I didn't like to say, the only time I've been in one before was when we were going from the Crumlin Road to the Maze."
He was on the OFM-DFM committee, you see, looking at how he did develop the news.
He sort of knew the layout pretty well, didn't he? There's a tunnel here, there's a tunnel there. What's the foundations there, too, Sam?
Jerry Kelly
knows
his way about too.
There's a lot of hidden talent.
Jerry Kelly and Michael Gimsey, they're starring in a play at the moment out in Newton Abbey called Stormont. They're the stars of it.
You reviewed it on.
I did, but I just wonder. Do you kind of resent that none of you guys have made it to Sean Crummy's play? Barry, would you like to be in it?
I would.
Yeah. I think we feel a bit left out. No, slighted.
Yeah,
I think, but technical. My view of the world is Belfast. Everything's Belfast, you know? So...
Why do you think it was selected, those two? I mean, Michael and Jimsy? Was it because of the smile?
The caricature.
The smile.
Wasn't it on the folks in the hood?
I think it was
in
the
Sean probably does folks in the hood, yes.
The way they caricature is not easily, isn't it?
Yes. Do you not think you'd be easily caricatured?
Probably would be, but nobody's interested. See, if you're from the far end of Yannon, nobody has a clue who you are.
tell me this, I've always wanted to know, because I've heard of 5 mile town. But you're from 6 mile town.
No, there is 6 mile cross beside us.
Is that further away?
Well, you have to go through Tourney.
Why are we getting directions now?
You have to go through Tourney.
Did it take coming here to finally find out how to get to one another?
Well, you have to go through Tourney and Torsala to get to 6 mile cross, the far side of Appleby Yard.
Satnav,
we don't have Satnav.
Do you not have
Hugo
Duncan on your Satnav?
No, we don't have Satnav.
Yeah, but Hugo did the Satnav thing. Hugo, you can get his voice in Satnav.
Hugo Duncan.
Yeah. But you can get those photographs now. You know, the whole of Northern Ireland has been photographed from the air, just to see how many acres we've got.
But I do love mentioning those places in Belfast, because people say, "I never heard of that place before." And you might remember, the risk of boring you.
No, I'm fine.
Last year, I did tell the wee story about when I arrived in Stormont the first day, and I drove up the Prince of Wales Avenue, which we have renamed the acronym POW Avenue. And this man appeared out of nowhere, but he didn't have a red light. He appeared out of nowhere and he says, "Stop." He said to me, "Have you business here today?" I said, "Certainly, step aside." And he says, "What's the nature of your business?" I said, "The people of Dregish." "The people of Dregish and Tatchiray have mandated me to come here on their behalf." And he says, "Go on ahead." He was all sorry. So the people of Tatchiray count. Always remember that. The Gallaghers and the Darcy's, they're all different people.
You're going to tell us about Mary?
We lobby a lot. You know, you lobby every day in life. And sometimes civil servants are not always ready to hear you. And I remember ringing the housing executive about a lady from Killeater, which is near Ahearn. And I said, "I'm ringing on behalf of a lady who resides at Crilly Park, Killeater." He says, "Have you got the house number to hand?" I said, "Not to hand, but I'll forward same later this afternoon if absolutely essential. There's 14 houses in it, look up your bloody records." And he says, "Huh, huh." I says, "Before we proceed, can I do a sound check? Did you utter the following sound? Huh?" And he says, "I unreservedly apologise." And I says, "Well, fair play to you, we're back on terms." But the net outcome was that Mary got her windows. Mary got her windows. So I got the windows for Mary.
You see, I feel, Barry, that you were born to be in this
sure
role.
Sure was.
What keeps you going, doing it?
I suppose the notion that you are... helping people. Like, genuinely, and I'm sure I speak for everybody here, but they wouldn't let me normally. But in the course of a day, you might be involved in at least 50 transactions for people. Mm. Up to 50 transactions. It's like a game of football. The ball's through in, if you're playing Gaelic. And you know, it goes on, and it's played at an intensity. There's such variety. But you do see results, you know. Even if it's only... you know, winning an exceptional circumstances body hearing for a child seeking admission to a school or whatever, that type of thing. You really feel good if you improve the quality of people's lives.
Okay, but Barry has 50 transactions a day. How many do you have, Colin?
Oh, two.
Yeah.
But can I say something? Can I say about a transaction that stands out? You just never know what's going to walk in the door on you. And about 2 weeks ago, we got a call from some... constituents not far from the office off the Lisbon Road, and they said, "Look, we have a problem with our double yellow line." So I said, "That's fine, we'll go over and have a look at it." So I looked at the double yellow lines, it looked faded, so I wrote to the road service and I said, "Listen, any chance you could repaint these double yellow lines, because there is a sheltered housing scheme just outside the double yellow lines and they're kind of getting a bit bored with people parking over their double yellow lines." And I get a letter back saying, "Those double yellow lines aren't double yellow lines." And I said, so I wrote back and I said, well, they look like double yellow lines, so how could they not be double yellow lines? And they wrote back and they said, "They are not approved double yellow lines." So I said, "Well, when's a double yellow line not a double yellow line?" And I decided to ask the minister on this occasion, because I'd been running with him and in between. So he said, "Go to the top." So I wrote to Conor Murphy and I said, "Minister, there are some double yellow lines outside such and such an address and such an avenue in South Belfast, and they say they're not double yellow lines. Maybe you could clarify me whether these double yellow lines are actually double yellow lines or not." And you already said, "They're not." So I said then, in a further letter, I said, "Well, what happens when the redcoats are walking up and down? How do they know the real double yellow lines are not real yellow lines?" It's brilliant. I am a bit like this, if you've ever followed me in committee again. And he wrote back to me and said, "Well, they just do." So I thought, this is a bit too good now, so I'm saving this up for next question time in the Assembly. So I saved it up for next question time and didn't bother writing back to him for a third time. I said, "Minister, further to that answer you gave me about how redcoats know when double yellow lines are double yellow lines and they're not double yellow lines, how do they actually know?" And he said, "They have a map." And I said, this goes on, I'm going to stop it very quick.
If you don't stop it, I'm going to push you off the back.
Actually, I'm extremely fascinated by this.
it's a brilliant story. I said, where's the map?
I was about to interject about 15 minutes ago.
How do you
start?
Is that what you say if somebody's not like this, do you just go, never give away?
Question, question.
If you're Dan Kennedy and Patsy McGlone's making a speech, and the speech is entirely irrelevant for a long and complicated reason, largely due to the fact that the amendment has been withdrawn, therefore the speech is not standing. But Patsy takes the view, it's 11 o'clock at night, we've been debating the wildlife bill for 7.5 hours, I'm making this bloody speech. I've listened to all you lot for 7 hours, I'm making my speech. He gets asked to give way 4 times during the speech. The first time is by Jim Wells, who proposed the amendment and had now withdrawn it, saying, listen, I've withdrawn the amendment, you don't need to make the speech. Patsy continues. Then it's Peter Weir, who was the seconder of the amendment. Would you please just note that the amendment's been withdrawn, you don't need to make the speech. Patsy continues. And the third time is Danny Kennedy, who gets up and he says, I implore you, I beg you. Would you stop making the speech? Patsy says, no.
We were intrigued. So the minister, we got to the minister telling you that a map was interesting.
So the map apparently is in Redcoat headquarters in Belfast,
and it shows them clearly where the double yellow lines are and aren't, and they're meant to memorise this map and understand it.
So if there are faded double yellow lines outside the sheltered housing accommodation somewhere in South Belfast, how did they get there in the first place?
This is the mystery.
And at that point, I know Barry would say never give up on the system, it'll never let you down. I gave up on the system and went to the papers.
And we got the double yellow lines painted and they're now official.
I want to ask this question. Have you ever considered why people have become somewhat disillusioned with politics?
I think it's
been too much on your side. It was just coming up. Now we have to wait and patience.
It's road service. See if you write to road service. They have a deadly way of making you feel bad about asking for something. If you ask for the maintenance of a road, they will say to you, you do appreciate that every project competes on a priority basis for a limited pool of funding, and then you're going, oh, I'm awful sorry for that.
Finally, because I'm aware of the time, and from an arts perspective, because this has been produced by MAC tonight, the new museum, Metropolitan Arts Centre, which is currently being built outside, there's huge, huge anxiety, and obviously it's Culture Night tonight in Belfast and in Derry, huge anxiety about arts funding in particular. If there was one thing that all of you could say to arts people tonight, people who work in the industry and people who support it, what would you do to make them feel better? Because obviously you need to feel better.
We've been waiting all night to get a chance to get a word in Israel. Now you hit me with a really hard scene.
Policy.
Okay, all right. Okay, let's see. What about a second job? Well, that sort of might be a good idea. Tell me, I didn't get to pick up on that. What did you say to your wife had to go back out to work?
Full-time.
Was that because you had to take a cut in salary to join the assembly?
You wouldn't do well
there. There is a there is an issue. If I could put a little plug in that... I went to the Milwaukee. Listen, try not. This is the serious bit.
We don't have to.
I've got to bring a tear to the eye. No. Child. But I went to a thing called the Milwaukee Irish Fest. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but if you haven't, I really recommend going along. And
is it near
Business School? It's beside 6 Mile Cross, but you would know it. But I went to this thing, and I remember it was just the end of August, and the leadership thing was coming up, and the lady phoned me and said, "Are you going to come over?" And I said, "Look, I'm sorry, but maybe I've got a little, something I have to do." She says, "No, but we really need you to be here. This is a big cultural event." And I said, "You do realise I'm an Ulster Unionist?" And it was just totally blank. She was like, "What's that?" So because I said I would go, I went. And it was a fantastic 5-day event, 120,000 people. There were
Irish bands, Ulster Scots bands, a mixture of Ulster Scots and Irish bands there. Fantastic environment. Everybody loved it, and you saw how people went on, got on together. And I was really glad that I took the time to go do it. And so the lesson in all of that is that culture plays a really important part in dealing with our past and perhaps our future. And the lesson or the advice that I would give to those of you that are involved in culture is you need to make it relevant to everybody. You need to make people realise that culture is not something that highbrow people do, it's something that we all do, it's part and parcel of our own life, and the more you sell it, the more funding you'll get.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose, I mean, there are a couple of things, I mean, just in terms of what advice you give, it's always dangerous to give advice to people who are doing this all the time when you're not involved in it all the time, but you know, I think actually the arts and culture sector, particularly in Belfast, I know Barry's been knocking Belfast and, you know, remind us that we're just get too big for a boot. But to be fair, as somebody from Belfast, I'm really proud of the arts and culture organisations in the city. Because, I mean, I saw particularly last year, I was going around the city, going to lots of events, so many of them organised by people who were just really committed on actually fairly small amounts of funding. But in terms of the added value that it brings, in terms of tourism, in terms of how people feel about the city, in terms of the way that the city looks and feels to people who come and spend time in it, the fact that it opens up communities to people who never would be in those places, the shared space that it creates in the city and the environment it creates is just really invaluable. And I have to say also that, to be fair, arts organisations are really professional. There was a time, I remember, in the council when there was a constant tension between kind of arts and culture organisations and what they wanted to do in their artistic direction and the kind of council wanting to control things from an economic development point of view. But I think that tension is largely gone. What I see now is very much people recognising that the two things are complementary. And, you know, I think it's working. And the fact that for culture night last year, the place was packed. I know tonight people were trying to get tickets for things and just couldn't get them. It shows that there's an appetite out there for people to want to be part of it. But I think it also, it gives people heart about the city and it makes them think. I mean, you could look at, if you look at the what's on in the papers and stuff every week, there's always something. There's a festival, there's an event, there's something happening, and it makes the city feel good and it makes the people who live in it feel good. And that's got rolled out way beyond just the tourism and the economy. It's good for people's health and their well-being to live in a place that's actually an exciting place. So I think you're doing all the right things. The fact you're going to have to do it on very little money is something that you're well accustomed to be honest.
But Conal, people are worried, you know, the people in this room, people who are out there in the streets trying to make tonight happen, who don't even know whether they're going to have a job in 6 months' time. We can say all, I mean, great words that we're hearing, but you know, you guys are elected representatives. Do you represent people in the arts community as well?
Well, I represent South Belfast, and it's a privilege because I represent, you know, some very, very, very special people, like Michael Longley. I've got this letter, handwritten letter from Michael Longley in the office about a 20 man an hour campaign we're running locally. Mm-hmm. He wrote back to me in his own handwriting saying, "I support your campaign," and it's gone up on the wall. It hasn't gone up on the wall because there's a grammar mistake in it, which there is. It's gone up on the wall because Michael Longley wrote a letter about a particularly ordinary thing, and it reminds us of the real treasures we have in our midst. And that's the case, I think, rather uniquely about this island, and particularly this part of the island. I mean, our diversity is what gives us our cultural added value. It is the art that emerges from that culture that makes us who we are. And if this place is ever to be reborn, it'll not be reborn in some sort of sterile, non-cultural context. It'll be reborn in all the richness of that cultural fabric. So, in essence, you ignore it at an administrative, governmental level, and you ignore your own future. You ignore the very thing on which rebirth of this part of Ireland can happen. So, for me, it's just, you know, I grew up in Spain, and there's a great story about Barcelona, which Colin Tobin encapsulates in a beautiful book he wrote about that city, about Barcelona during the worst days of the Industrial Revolution, when the factory owners did one thing for the workers, and they did very little for the workers. They were not particularly favoured factory owners, and it was to put on open-air classical concerts. And Barcelona, to this day, has a very special and deep tradition of classical music that is born out of that very real connection between a very, very serious part of art, and I think we need serious art as well as community art,
and very ordinary working class people. We can have that in this city. It's what we've come from, and I would be very sad if we ever lost it.
Thank you. Finally,
I will again to be conciliatory about Belfast. I agree with everything Naomi said about Belfast, and the culture offering in Belfast is first class. But I have been chair of the Culture, Arts and Leisure Committee, so that meant that I have become quite familiar with the arts sector, and I am impressed, genuinely impressed. And the fact that the committee of 11, we have had many opportunities to engage, I think means that we are supporters big time of the arts. So therefore it's a good idea to engage with people beyond our committee. One thing I've learned is that it's not a drain on resources, it is an investment, it's not a burden, and it's a net contributor to the economy. I mean, all that activity that you talk about out on the streets of Belfast tonight, you know, there's an economic spin-off, which is very often underappreciated.
And Derry as well, as mentioned.
Legendary.
That's right. Yeah.
UK City of Culture 2013. I mean, it's happening throughout Ireland, but they're also doing it as well.
Absolutely. And many people are involved in the arts. You see, sometimes the word the arts puts people off. And I remember an independent councillor in Loma saying, arts should not appear in the title of the new arts centre. He said, because it puts people off. It puts people off. He thinks it's stuffy. He thought it was stuffy. And Frank Sweeney, the arts officer, gave a brilliant answer. He said, there are two reasons why arts shall appear in the title of the building. He said, number one, it is a building where arts are practised therein. Although I think he shouldn't have ended that sentence with a prediction. But, and the second one he said was, plus the Arts Council gave it £4 million. But the other favourite arts story is, you know the way the teacher, you know, who inspired you? I'm sure we can all be cynical, but I'm sure there was at least one teacher who inspired you. Well, in Oma, my inspirational teacher died a couple of years ago, Paddy Grugan, and he was a car park attendant at the Mid-Ulster Drama Festival. And the gory players of Wexford arrived one night, and the Slemish players had been there the night before, and they got out of their van and they said, with all their stuff, what about last night's play, to Paddy, the car park attendant? And Paddy hadn't seen the play, because he'd parked cars for 25 years. But he read the adjudicator's flyer, his comments at the end of the night, and Paddy said to the gory player Wexford about the Slemish players, Ballymena, oh, there was a tremendous unity of lighting and pace. the gory player Wexford turned around and said, oh my God, we have a lot to live up to. So we know our drama.
And we have had a lot to live up to tonight. It has been an absolute pleasure having all of you here. Please, if everybody could put their hands together and thanks also to Anne and all the team here at, I was going to say here at Mac, we're in the Ramada Encore, but I feel that we're getting closer and closer to Mac as the years go on. Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Before we go, Barry has allowed me to have the last word. he has asked me to say on behalf of the four of us up here that we have really enjoyed talking to you all, but we'd like to have a special thanks to Mary Louise, who I think conducted very well.